Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned for today. During the first hour, we're going to be talking about self-perceived versus actual and desired body weights with Dr. Paul Mueller. Then, during the top of the new hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jeff Galini for our regularly scheduled Science for Humans episode. We're going to talk about alkalizing the human body. And then at the bottom of the second hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Danielle Arrigo to talk about social comparison, negative body image, and disordered eating behavior. So there's a little bit of a theme here with a mild break in the middle to talk about some issues related to preventative procedures. We're going to first, get started by reminding everybody that Age Force is getting ready to remove their free month trial of their fat burner patch. If you want to try this patch, it's a 1 month trial for free. You just pay shipping and handling to get it to you. And it's at superhumanradio.com. Look for the skyscraper banner ad for Age Force. Use the coupon code free patches. And remember, Superhuman Radio is being made possible through a special grant from All American EFX and their parent company, All American Pharmaceutical. Go to superhumanradio.com to learn more about them. So let's get started. Dr. David Mueller, how are you? I'm sorry, Paul Mueller. Wrong. I got two guests combined. Paul Mueller, sorry about that. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, my pleasure. You know, we are finding ourselves discussing perception versus actual body weight, body image, and not only its role on stigmatizing people and possibly causing some behaviors, but more importantly, the way people see themselves and hence whether or not they take action to correct maybe some high risk behaviors and so on. Talk about your research first of all. How was it designed?
So I'm a general internist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm the chair of the Division of General Internal Medicine, and we see over 100,000 patient visits every year. And like most of the country, many of our patients are overweight or obese, and it actually turns out to be about two-thirds of our patients are overweight and about a third are obese. And we, based on prior research, we understood that even though patients were overweight or obese, doctors often did not recognize the weight issue and did not document the weight issue or a treatment plan in the medical record, really only about 20%. And that concerned us because overweight and obesity, and I use those as nouns, are associated with many diseases, at least 60, including 12 different cancers. And if trends continue in the United States, obesity will overtake smoking as the leading preventable cause of death. And given these data, actually the American Medical Association now recognizes obesity as a disease that requires medical intervention. So we had a dilemma on our hands. We had, one, a lot of our patients are affected by overweight or obesity. Two, our doctors weren't recognizing it, and here we are at a premier medical institution, or we like to think it is. And third, the problem is associated with more than 60 diseases, 12 cancers, and so much so that it's now regarded as a leading cause of preventable death. So we wanted to do something about it, and we did this study.
Now, when I looked at the paper, I actually was taken aback at the small number of clinical records where the clinician or physician had identified I think it was 20 or 24%. I think you just said that. I know, but I was shocked by that, which I started to think why. You know, why are doctors not writing it down? Do they think it's unimportant? Do they feel that they are being judged? You know, because this is obesity is one of those things that you have to. It's a landmine. You got to be careful the way you approach it.
Yeah, you actually, our findings have been seen elsewhere. Actually, a study just came out in BMJ Open and within the last several weeks that showed similar findings. There are a number of factors why doctors don't diagnose overweight and obesity. One factor is that, and we say this in our paper, it's hidden in plain sight. What used to be regarded as, well, you're overweight or obese, is now the new normal because it's so prevalent. So doctors may not be recognizing a problem in the patient because it's the new normal. You also, it's hard to talk sometimes to patients about weight without being judgmental or being perceived as being judgmental. And most doctors I know aren't trying to be judgmental. They're trying to act for the benefit of the patient and in their best interests to advise them about weight, how it affects their health, how it's associated with dozens of diseases, including cancer, and what we can do about it. But there's that social stigma, the stigma associated with being overweight and obese, that makes it a barrier. We've done some focus group studies with our doctors, and they all identify this as a problem, the barrier, the stigma associated with obesity, which there shouldn't be. It's a health condition that we should view like any other and
right.
treat it as such. Another factor that might be at play is that doctors these days, especially with an aging society, are grappling with dozens of different issues with patients. So, for example, if you have a patient that has a very high BMI, they're obese, they may have obesity-associated conditions like heart disease, diabetes, and so on, and those are things that we tend to pay our attention to. Let's get the sugar down, let's treat your cholesterol. Let's treat your heart disease. Let's treat the arthritis that you have as a result of the weight, the sleep apnea. And at the end of the day, you just don't have time to address the weight itself. So there's all the other things that the physicians and other clinicians have to deal with as well. Then finally, until recently, there wasn't any sort of reimbursement or coding for talking to a patient about their weight and counseling them on weight loss.
That's shocking to me, but I know that that's changing. And in fact, you know, we have insurance companies now that are paying for gym memberships for people to help them get exercise into the picture. You know, I wonder now the original data for this was compiled back in 2009, right?
That's right.
Did we also ask the clinicians any questions about their perception of their own body weight? And do we know if any of the clinicians or physicians that were involved with this cohort, they themselves had issues with obesity?
Well, I'm actually the department chair, so I can say that some of them who participated do struggle with weight because the whole population does.
Right.
But we didn't stratify the data according to the physician's characteristics. So we don't know that. That you actually raise a very interesting hypothesis that should be studied. It's a great question.
Yeah, because I may not be comfortable. You know, if I'm overweight, I may not feel qualified. I may not feel privileged to counsel you. You know, that whole do as I say, not as I do phenomenon that we learned as children in the 50s. You know, it's hard today to imply that. You know, look, don't worry about me. I know I'm overweight. I'm trying to help you. So I wonder sometimes if some physicians hold back and think, you know, how can I counsel this person about their obesity when I'm struggling against the same tide right now? So that would be an interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Although some of my best doctors who do this, who struggle with weight, are honest with the patients. They say, you know, I struggle with this too, and I work every day to try to limit my calorie intake, try to exercise. I do some behavioral medicine interventions.
Right.
Some have actually gone on to take medicine or bariatric surgery. But I think that honesty, if you're in that situation, say, I've struggled with this too, there has to be appropriate self-disclosure because there's, you know, that's the doctor-patient relationship. There
right.
has to be trust, and there's some things you shouldn't disclose or wouldn't be necessary. But I think you know, sometimes saying, you know, I've had this too, I've been there, let me help you with it because I know where the resources are and I'm going to walk you through this. I'll be here each step of the way. One patient I had who I saw here 15 years or so ago, she weighed about 375 pounds. I'm blessed that I don't have overweight or obesity, but she told me these horrible stories about interactions with doctors, how they judged her and said things about how is it possible you can do this when you weigh so much. And I looked at her, and she's a sweet gal. She's a social worker. And I said, "You're a lovely person. You're beautiful on the inside. Let's approach this as a health issue, and mm-hmm. we'll walk through this." And she got down to about 180 pounds. And a great day in my career is when she hugged me and said, "I'm half of what I used to be." And so this was a nice thing. And I think if you can be honest and look at the patient and say you're not. You shouldn't be equated with your weight. It's a health issue. Now let's deal with that health issue because inside you're a person and we respect that and we need to treat the issue as it is.
No, I agree. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I've got lots more questions to ask and hopefully get answered. We're talking right now with Dr. Paul Mueller. We're talking specifically about self-perceived versus actual and desired body weight. We're going to get deeper into the details of this study when we come back. Stay tuned.
Want freakish muscle gains? Freak Maker Build from AAEFX is a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline and medium chain triglycerides, a 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of pre-alkaline pH buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic, raw, EVOO, for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Yo, Mike check. Yeah, here you go.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I heard he got that hot new thing.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Mueller today. We're talking about self-perceived versus actual and desired body weight. It's a really interesting study, not only from the standpoint of what we were talking about earlier, and that is how clinicians see their patients, but how patients see themselves. If we know anything about self-reporting, we know that people seem to underreport some things and overreport others, which I think played out in this research as well. By the way, Dr. Mueller, I was 330 pounds when I turned 40 years old in 2000. And my doctor, Dr. Jim Swift, one day said to me, but I like that. I'm from New York. Tell me what it's about. You know what I mean? Don't sugarcoat it. He said, look, it's simple. You got to eat less and you got to move more. And I'll never forget, it wasn't so much that the way he said it, and it wasn't the words that he said, but it was the simplicity of the truth that, you know what? If I just erase all the emotional ties to food, if I really look at this like an equation for a while, there is and lo and behold, I mean, I lost over 100 pounds. Now I'm 230 now, but I'm about 13% body fat, and very, very, I'm hypermuscular as a result.
And you probably feel a lot better too.
Oh, I'm stronger and in better shape than I was when I was in my 20s. But the point is, I can relate to the story that you told about that one patient, because I was 330 pounds and I didn't like being that way, but I just didn't understand what it took to change my outcome. And the other thing is, and what we're going to talk about now, is my perception of myself was probably not as bad as it should have been. So let's talk about this particular study. There were 508 or 500.
Yeah, 508.
Okay.
And so you'll notice that the first author has the same last name as I do, and that's my daughter.
Oh, and that had to be a wonderful experience then, huh?
Yeah, so she's actually interested in public health and pursuing actually interviewing today for graduate schools, and
oh,
so
wonderful.
she actually is the initiator of this study, and so that was a lot of fun. But basically, what she did is she created a survey instrument for over 500 consecutive patients that we saw in our internal medicine clinic here at Mayo during 2009, and so it's a convenience sample, and our results may not be the same as what you'd find in New York or any other place, but it would be what we saw here in Rochester, Minnesota, but I'm guessing it's probably fairly similar to what you would find elsewhere.
Right.
And she just basically asked the question, what is your height? What is your weight? How would you identify yourself, underweight, about right, overweight, or obese? And we use those categories because the World Health Organization does. And then she asked a very creative question, what would you like to weigh? And then we compared those data. So that was the first thing that happened to these patients. And then we measured their actual height, their actual weight, calculated their BMI, and then calculated what their self-perceived BMI was, their actual BMI, and what their desired BMI would be. And nobody had ever done that before. And as you can imagine, people reported themselves to be taller than actual, to be lighter than actual. But everyone, or most of the patients, wanted to lose some amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And of the 32% of patients who were obese, only 6% perceived that they actually were obese. And there was actually what we call a dose-response relationship. So the heavier you were, the greater the chance of misperception of what your own body weight category was. So as your weight went up, the perception altered. But when you looked at what did people want to lose, what they actually put down, what their desired weight would be, for most of them, that put them into the normal BMI range.
So they did have some perception. It was almost
right.
like it was almost like the,
subconscious.
That, it was like a mea culpa when they came back and said, "But I'd like to lose this much." You know, it's like, "Oh,
yeah."
So you do understand where you really are.
Yeah, and we don't. You know, there's probably very complex reasons why people put themselves into when they put their desired weight, they put them into the normal weight range. And that's worth exploring further with more research, but we found that to be highly fascinating.
Now there were some individuals that were more accurate about their own assessment, but they tended to be, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm going from memory, but they tended to be women of a higher educational level. Is that correct?
That's right. And smoking status. And, of course, the lower the BMI, the more accurate. So that's just the opposite of what I said earlier. The lower the actual BMI, the more accurate people were on their BMI category. So if they were in the overweight range, they were more likely to say they were overweight, as opposed to if they were in the obese range, they were more likely to say normal or overweight.
Oh.
But being a woman, higher education and smoking status were associated with greater accuracy. And again, there are probably complex reasons for why those categories were related to more accuracy. I note that you have a body image discussion later on.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe for women in our country, or in weight is an issue that's often discussed. Higher education may be a surrogate for better access to medical care.
Mm-hmm.
We don't fully understand what's going on there. Smoking status is very interesting because if you talk to any smoker, one of the first concerns they have about stopping smoking is weight gain.
Yes.
So smokers often think about weight and they couple it with should they stop smoking or not, or there's often that discussion that happens. And about 20% of patients who do stop smoking actually gain weight. The remainder either stay the same or lose some weight.
Now, the 32% of this cohort being obese kind of fits the national levels right now, right?
It does, and that lends to some of the validity of the study is that these, although we can't say for sure, our results would be generalizable to say New York or Baltimore or Florida. They do mirror the national, results in terms of how much people weigh in their weight category.
And I have a feeling that, and you're right to be cautious about overlaying this across the nation, because when we talk about national averages, we take into account that there are some states where obesity is more prevalent and some where it's less prevalent, so the average is kind of the mean in the middle. But I have to believe that Arizona, Nevada, California, Florida, the warmer climates would tend to have maybe slightly fewer, not greatly, but slightly fewer obese people just because of the intolerable heat and the inability to cover up with heavy clothing to mask the obese situation.
Actually, Colorado is probably one of the best states in terms of, one of the states that has the least prevalence of obesity and overweight. Minnesota is actually up in the upper echelon, so it's pretty good here. But remember also, this is a group of patients who came to our clinic, so they had other issues.
And that, right.
And so, it's a very skewed population in that regard. It would not be generalizable to the population.
Yeah.
But if you're a patient, it could be relevant to you. Our average age in the study was about 60 years, 63 years.
And that's also a loaded age, Because women especially, as they start to go through menopause and men start to reach that 40 plus age, they tend to put on weight to a greater degree. So we would expect that group of individuals, and especially if they have pre-existing issues that cause them to even show up there, we would expect them to have problems, or maybe the weight issue is contributing to some of their problems, as you pointed out in the intro. So
the other
good. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No. Please.
Well, I was gonna say the other thing that's interesting about the weight loss desired, as the more accurate people were, the higher the self-perceived BMI category, the more average desired weight loss, which makes sense. So if somebody perceived themselves to be obese, they were more likely to desire weight loss than the people who actually were obese. So perception is really key. Self-perception of your weight is really important because those individuals want to lose more weight. Mm-hmm. And prior research has shown that they're more likely to embrace a weight loss plan, try to lose weight, have more attempts to lose weight. And the other thing that's really important is that a clinician's diagnosis of obesity is strongly associated with a weight management plan that's been documented. So if I make the diagnosis, I'm very likely to have in my note, we discussed weight, I recommended a dietary program, an activity program, and meeting with a therapist if necessary. But again, a lot of clinicians don't diagnose obesity or overweight, and it's very unlikely they're going to have a plan for weight as a result.
Right.
So the key about diagnosis is to correct self-perception, uh-huh. because self-perception is associated with desire to lose weight and attempts to lose weight, and correct diagnosis is associated with creating a treatment plan for that patient.
Really interesting. And, you know, it really makes sense when we look at the human condition in general and the way we have the ability to kind of, I hate the word denial. People like to use the word denial, but we have the ability to rationalize things in a certain way where, you know, our perception becomes the reality, and the reality becomes this nuisance, this annoyance that we really don't want to pay attention to. So
yeah, we didn't call it denial. We actually called it hidden in plain sight, or the new normal.
Yeah,
I mean,
I like
people are just unaware, or they don't have awareness of, or many patients don't have awareness that their weight is an issue. Now you sound like you're very muscular and very fit, so. Just one caveat about BMI is that it doesn't always work for every patient. You know that. You have a very low body fat percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
You're very muscular, so your BMI is going to be
a lie. No, my BMI, and let's do this. Let's take this break, and let's come back, because we've actually done a show about there's a better way to do BMI when you combine waist circumference in the scenario as well. But let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back to speak with more about this subject with Dr. Paul Mueller. Stay tuned.
One-two punch for muscle growth is increased pump and increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workout the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. H-Force introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now Patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. AgeForce has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoForce is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of KetoForce and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the KetoForce banner ad today.
today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Paul Mueller. We're talking about self-perceived versus actual and desired body weights of individuals. And as you can see, many people tend to think they're not in as bad a shape as they really are, except when they come to smart women who like to smoke cigarettes. But, okay, so I had to get new life insurance last year, and I talked about it on the show. And so I had to do a survey over the phone. And when I told the person that I was 232 pounds and I was 6'1", she said, "Oh, my goodness, your BMI," I think she said it was 31 or 32. I forget what it was. And she says, "You know, you're technically obese." And I said, "No, I'm not obese." I said, "I'm about, 14% body fat, and I'm hypermuscular." It doesn't matter. You're obese. And so that sparked a discussion on the air that ensued that, BMI is, for anybody who's ever, been to a rifle range with a new rifle and a new scope, you know that there is something called a bore scope that gets you on the paper, but then you have to fine tune your primary scope to bring it into the bullseye. And I think of BMI as like a bore scope. It's bore sighting. It gets you on the paper, but it doesn't give you enough information to really know what you're dealing with. Obviously, DEXA scan and stuff like that is too expensive. So we interviewed a scientist last year. Maybe it was the year before, actually. I have to tell you. I think it was 2 years ago. That talked about a better alternative to BMI was to take into conjunction the waist to hip ratio and circumference, and then use BMI to actually calculate whether the person is truly obese. And is that starting to catch on now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, you touched on something that led to a practice change for us here in Rochester, and actually we think we're one of the few groups who actually does it automatically now. But it's also recommended by the Obesity Society and the American Heart Association. So, in addition to calculating BMI, so you need to get a height and a weight, it's recommended that waist circumference also be done, because central adiposity, the weight that you carry in your tummy as opposed to in your legs, is associated with higher risk.
Right.
And the number for men is you want to be less than 40 inches, and for women you want to be less than 35 inches. And really what it does is it risk stratifies things a little bit more. So for the overweight individual, if he's a man, and their waist circumference is greater than 40 inches, it's like being obese. And so that would be very important. That's very easy to look up if you forget. You just type in your browser, Waist Circumference National Institute of Health, or NIH, and their patient guide is right there for you. There's all sorts of online calculators for calculating BMI as well.
I have to tell you that I am going to make a prediction on the show right now. That in about another half dozen to a dozen years, we're going to have to look at some way of measuring distension of the stomach and its contribution to this, because there are guys and gals out there who have accumulated visceral fat, but they don't have the traditional love handles and fat around the belly button area that you would imagine. But that visceral fat is indication of perhaps uncontrolled insulin levels and blood sugar. And even though they're finding a way, either through genetics or whatever you have, to not necessarily put on the traditional, what is it called, a appendicular, when it starts to hang off of you, they don't have that kind of fat, but it's happening inside the body. So I have a funny feeling that physicians are going to have to look at lean people who don't have much muscle on their carcass, and then the combination of a distended stomach should also be a signal something is up.
Well, you're spot on. We're learning. There's a tremendous amount of research in obesity and its subtypes, and a couple things to touch on this. So when we do intakes now for our patients, if we were to do this study today, we would not only have height, weight, BMI, but also waist circumference. So we do that in a standard way. And then we have a chart on the intake forms that's really highlighted so the doctors see it. And that's been associated with increased diagnoses of overweight and obesity in our department. So we were astonished by our own results, and we in turn did an intervention to improve our diagnosis rate. So that's one little success. We haven't published that yet, but we intend to. We're actually presenting it at, we've presented it at meetings and things like that. The other thing you touch on is, what about the patient who you think has visceral adiposity, or their BMI is elevated but they're muscular? We have devices that can measure percent body fat in a fairly economical way. So there are means of doing that beyond just height, weight, and waist circumference.
So like a bod pod, something that displaces air?
That's right. We have those.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And there are actual devices you can buy now that are fairly convenient and inexpensive that we can just, we have several right in our office that we use. Now, the other thing is that's very important for your listeners to know is that the results we presented are almost 95% Caucasian, the participants were.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an emerging body of evidence that folks from different parts of the world, weight and BMI has different meaning. And one area is Asia, Southeast Asia, moving over into India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and that area. They actually need to be even thinner. So a BMI of 27 or higher should be regarded as obesity for that group because of the genetic piece that you alluded to earlier. This is all new data, we're emerging data, and we're beginning to learn more that the BMI classes don't necessarily apply to all ethnic groups.
So phenotypes have to start being taken into account as well now.
Yeah, you need to think about ethnicity.
Yeah.
If I saw somebody whose heritage is in India and their BMI is 28, I may be tempted to say, well, you're overweight, so let's just move. But a lot of those individuals will have high sugars, they'll have high cholesterol, they'll have the manifestations, you know, fatty liver that you see in heavier persons. It's just being manifest at a lower BMI. So we're learning that for some people, the categories have to be adjusted down.
this is really interesting. You know, I mean, and what it comes back to is, and this is part of the problem, quite frankly. And after the break, I want to talk about the new norm. I want to go back to that you used a couple times in our discussion. But the other problem is, those within the, let's say, anti-obesity category, many of them are looking for a silver bullet. You know, the thrifty gene, this diet, that diet pill, this particular diet, you know, and really, it's the answer to this is multifaceted. People like to say it's a lifestyle change, but that makes people take a deep breath and go, I am already doing as much as I can now. I can't do anything more, which makes then puts the person into the mindset of, you know what? I'm fine with my body weight. I'm just going to have to live like this, and this is it because there's nothing I can do about it. But what you're doing, you know, I have to tell you, the Mayo Clinic has always been known for being a very progressive environment for medicine. And I kind of thought that you guys just kind of fell in lockstep with the medical orthodoxy. But some of the things that you're telling me right now make me think, my God, you know, there are physicians out there who get it and are applying it. And I have to applaud you. I have to tell you the truth, because most physicians don't have a clue when it comes to nutrition, its contribution to the etiology of disease and even the reversal of some diseases, and the effects on body weight and obesity. So I have to applaud you. I really do. And I'm not pandering to you. I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. I'll remind me, I can tell you about some other interventions we've done here with our own staff that you'd be interested in.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take this break early, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about that. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Freakish muscle gains, Freak Maker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines Protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline and medium chain triglycerides, a 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast-absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cree alkaline pH buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
Your physique is carved from sweat, reps, and discipline. It's time to show off your hard work with Quest Apparel, clothes engineered to enhance the contours of your body. The makers of the number one selling Quest Bar created Quest Apparel with your body and philosophy in mind. Every shirt, pant, and dress has an inspirational custom tagline as a reminder to yourself and a subtle message to those around you that you carve your path to be the exception, because you are made, not born. Go to questapparel.com. Enter code SUPERHUMAN to receive 20% off your purchase today.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced Phytoform. Phytoform has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. AgeForce has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Paul Mueller from the Mayo Clinic about self-perceived versus actual and desired body weight. You know, Dr. Mueller, November of this year will be my 10-year anniversary of doing this show. And when I first started doing the show, I used to sign off every episode by saying, muscle is metabolic currency. So get into the gym and make a deposit today. And fast forward, we're learning that this is very true, especially keeping people from becoming obese and diabetic, and it improves resting metabolic rate and so on. I want someday for the medical orthodoxy to realize that that muscle is very important, and they start prescribing things that make people get stronger and more muscular, at least maintain their muscle mass as they age.
Yeah, so I think you're right, and the best prescription plan for that is to eat a proper diet and to get out there and move your body around.
Yeah.
And really pay attention to the behavioral clues or triggers that make you want to eat more. For me, I have a sweet tooth, and if I see a pastry or a donut, it just is screaming out to me to eat it. And that's my trigger, and so I recognize that when I see it, and I try to avoid it. For other people, they have a sort of a salty taste, and their trigger is chips and things like that. You just need to own that and recognize it, and then do things that will avoid it, like chewing a stick of gum instead, or going out for a walk. A very vulnerable time for people is in the late afternoon, just prior to dinner. And they're waiting for dinner. Maybe they smell dinner and they want to eat, and so they run to the pantry and get some snacks as dinner is being prepared. That's a good time to go out and do some exercise, go for a walk, chew some gum, do something different. Keep stuff out of the house that's going to, you know, feed that trigger, like chips and things like that. Those are behavioral modification tools that are very helpful. We also encourage people to really use the technology that's now available if it's affordable. You see all sorts of devices, I won't name the companies, but smartphones and that can track your walking. You know, if I look at my smartphone and it says I've only done 4,000 steps, I know I need to do something else that day to get up beyond that 10,000. And we're actually doing a study in that regard, and others have been done. Other studies have shown that those devices can be very helpful. For our employees, there's a maker of one of the products to help lose weight, a benefactor of ours, who funded what we call our Healthy Living Program. There's a center here for employees to use to exercise when they have time.
That's great.
So for their lunch hour, and then throughout this entire hour on that radio program, I've been peddling. I have a device under my desk because I have a sedentary job. And I pedaled the entire time, or most of the time, as we've been talking, just to keep my body moving. And
right.
I'm a little warm, but that's been good. So people got interested in that, and we actually bought 60 of them for our division. And our secretaries are using them. They're part of a study to see if it actually improves health. So there are things you can do if you have a sedentary job. Stand while you work
yes.
at the computer. We call that non-exercise thermogenesis. So people, it's the kind of movement of your body that's outside of an exercise program that burns up calories. I think part of this has to do with living in 2015 as opposed to 1915. My ancestors who settled Minnesota in the late 1800s, they had to carry their water. They had to milk cows. They did a lot of activity during the day that we don't do anymore. And so we need to replace that with something and eat less.
Yeah, because they were more like hunter-gatherers, which we evolved to be. You know, when we were hunter-gatherers, we spent 80% of our day finding and consuming food. Now, think about that.
And they, they were muscular as a result of that,
yes,
too.
Yes. And
you,
you know,
you look at those old photographs, those are some tough people, and they looked very fit and trim as a result,
and
they had to.
You know what? I made a prediction on this show many years ago that probably 75 to 100 years from now, the jobs that will be in demand, that will be in demand not because they pay more, but because the individuals have a greater health span, are going to be, you know, brick mason and landscaper, because it's those of us who sit at a desk. You know, you sit in your car for an hour to get to work. You sit at your desk for 8 hours or 10 or 12. You sit in your car to drive home. You sit at dinner. You sit and watch the news. Then you lay down. Is there any wonder why inactivity is starting to creep up as a an indication for mortality and morbidity? I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
And to your point, the more muscle mass you have, the more thermogenic you're going to be. And so that's very important. The other benefit of being strong from a musculoskeletal standpoint and fit in that regard is it helps you avoid some of the other consequences of aging, like falling.
Yep.
Now, falls and broken hips are a major problem. In fact, orthopedic issues, musculoskeletal issues, are the number one cause of morbidity, why people feel bad in older life. Heart disease and cancer are still the number one, two causes of mortality, death, but morbidity, feeling bad, not being able to function, is musculoskeletal. So having strong muscles not only helps you deal with weight issues, but also prevent some of the other consequences of aging.
Yeah. It's a great message, and it sounds like those of you at the Mayo Clinic really do have a grasp on this, and I just wish more physicians around the country really understood this. And so in summary, and we only have about 5 minutes, what do you hope is taken away from this research paper?
Well, I hope people now will look at it and say, gee, I wonder what my real height is, what's my real weight? Compare them with reality, and then come up with a plan. Look at your BMI, what's your desired weight, and what's your waist circumference, and then you might go for a body fat analysis, see a physician or a clinician. And if you have a weight issue, the cornerstones of treatment are the following. One is diet, and I get a lot of questions about which diet should I choose, and there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of them. Should I do the one that's heavy on fats versus heavy on fruits and vegetables, low carb, etc.? A recent study, a big meta-analysis, looked at dozens of studies and tried to come up with the answer to that. And everyone will have their anecdotes. They'll say, you know, I went on this one and I lost a lot of weight. And I say, that's great, because it satisfied you. You felt good after eating that diet, and it led to weight loss. And that's what this big meta-analysis showed, that there's really no diet that's better than the other. And that should make us begin. And that actually is liberating for
yes.
me as a physician, because
yes.
I can say, you know, they're all good. What they all have in common is calorie restriction. You have to consume fewer calories in the day than you burn in order to lose weight. We try to shoot for 500 calorie difference. There are online calculators where you can estimate how many calories you can burn in a day. You just need to eat 500 less than that. And if you can do that through the low-carb diet, the fruits and vegetable diet, the high-fat diet, go have at it, because right. They will all get the and that's what satisfies you. Second thing is to look at activity. And so for some people, because of health issues or orthopedic concerns, they can't go out and jog. But walking is phenomenal, or swimming,
mm-hmm.
or put one of these little pedal devices under your desk at work, and or climb stairs instead of taking the elevator if you can, or park a little bit further away from your job. But get that walking in, move your body around, stand while you work. Anything where you can burn calories is good. The third cornerstone is behavioral issues. So what are your triggers for eating? Are you, you know, are you responding to a stressful situation through food or through something that's actually going to benefit you, like a walk? Medications and surgeries are reserved for people who've tried all of those things and they still struggle. Surgery really for people who have really high body mass and high obese, severe obesity, and especially those who are now developing consequences of their obesity, such as diabetes, sleep apnea, and so on.
Right.
And I do prescribe those for selected patients.
As a rescue. It's really a rescue at that point in time.
Part of the purpose of this study is to prevent people from getting in that situation in the first place. Let's have a realistic perception of body weight. And once that perception is realistic, let's do something about it.
And also for clinicians to start,
yes, diagnose it too.
That's it. And for clinicians to start diagnosing it and having, you know, the difficult conversations with their patients about the realities of their body weight. And like
right.
you said, framing it in, this is about health. This is not about how you look. You should love who you are regardless of what you look like. But what your health concerns me, this is your weight, and we have to address that. And I like
Amen.
That approach. Listen, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the show today. It was a very good discussion.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Best wishes to everybody out there.
Yes, yes. And congratulations to your daughter. She should be very proud to have worked with you on this project. Really, I mean that. It's great. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye. All right, so there you have it. Great discussion. Many of the things that we just discussed, we've talked about on the show before, obviously. But it's good to hear it coming from somebody up there at the Mayo Clinic. They get it. I like that. And you know what? It gives me hope. It really does. It makes me think that, wow, the medical orthodoxy is really starting to pick up on this. They're getting it. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jeff Galini for an episode of Science for Humans when we talk about alkalizing the human body. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic, raw, EVOO, for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935.
Everyone knows how important staying hydrated is for your health, but have you ever thought about what's in the water you're drinking? Truth is, it's not good. Stop second guessing and get the Clearly Filtered pitcher filter and drink with confidence, knowing that your water is pure. Clearly Filtered water filters eliminate dozens of harmful contaminants that can keep you from achieving optimal hydration and peak performance. Don't put up with mediocre water. You deserve better. Click the Superhuman Radio banner ad now and get an exclusive SHR package discount and free shipping.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support, to weight management, to nervous system support, to detox and cleansing, and more. Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex. It's finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. This is our regularly scheduled episode of Science for Humans with Dr. Jeff Galini. How you doing, Dr. Jeff?
I'm doing good, Carl. How about you?
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, I got to be honest with you, Dr. Jeff. I'm really looking forward to this discussion for my own edification and education because I have been a staunch believer that you really can't affect the alkalinity or acidity of your body. The body already does a really good job of that, regulating a very, very narrow threshold of pH. But in preparation for this discussion, what I've learned is that blood pH and cellular pH could be very, very different, huh?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it is important to keep that balance in the pH.
So first of all, let's talk about real quick, if you can give me like the Reader's Digest version of what goes awry when the pH goes awry, and what is it? Is it too acidic that we have to worry about?
Yeah, and I guess first we need to kind of just briefly let our listeners know what pH stands for. You know, that's potential hydrogen. It's the way that we measure electrical resistance between negative and positive ions. But it is bad for the body to go too acidic, which means it goes down the pH, but it's also bad for the body to become too alkalized. Mm. But really what we're going to focus on, which is the most common problem, is the body becoming too acidic.
And is that because many of us adhere to a high-protein diet?
You know, that's only one cause. There are many causes like stress and just normal things like exercising, breathing, digesting foods, all that generates acidic waste.
Ah, I didn't realize that. Okay, so where do you want I want you to take it where you want to go, because I'm actually looking to learn from this discussion here.
Well, I think, you know, again, realizing that our bodies want to be and are designed to be slightly alkalized. So around 7.4, 7 being neutral, is kind of the perfect environment. This is where oxygen, nutrients, and things can be transferred through the bloodstream. You know, when you get into those acidic environments, that's when problems cause. So it's very important for us to keep our bodies in balance. Now, keep in mind, our bodies do have a built-in alkalizing system, which will want to alkalize because going acidic is very dangerous. But some of the things that you will find, you know, when your body is acidic, is this is when you're going to see more acne, headache, joint pains, indigestions. It'll lower your immune system. Even people with weak hair, nails, and things like trouble losing or gaining weight, and of course allergies. These are all kind of common things that the common denominator is an acidic environment. And as I said, you know, it could be from stress or some external environment, but it also is part of our body's normal processing to exercising or breathing. It's important to keep alkalized, and there are a variety of ways to accomplish that, you know.
Now, if you stay in the acidic realm, you could also end up with osteoporosis if you stay there long enough, because the body will release minerals from the bones to buffer the blood, right?
Well, absolutely. And what really happens is when your body has this acid or increased acid in the bloodstream, you know, it is going through those arteries and veins, and it's actually like etching, similar to acid, you know, small grooves. And as cholesterol, calcium, and what have you are rolling through those arteries, it's going to patch up those holes.
So this could be a source of plaque building. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
I never realized that.
Absolutely. You know, again, it's not that it's going to happen if you go and drink a soda pop, but again, these are things that we're finding common denominators in. So I always say, why take the chance?
So how do we go about accomplishing alkalizing the body?
You know, it's pretty easy. One of the ways that I found is the most easiest is chloralkali. You know, again, I'm not pitching creatine, but it is alkalized, and clinical studies show that it did elevate pH. So something of that nature is very, very easy to take. The other thing is, you know, you'll find at a lot of the health food stores, there are these nice alkalized waters. They're a little bit on the expensive side. So the best thing is to look to your food sources that help to alkalize. And probably one of the best, which you wouldn't think would work, would be lemons. Somebody just squeezing a little bit of lemon juice in some lukewarm water in the morning will help alkalize your blood. Other things that you can do, most all leafy greens are alkalizing. Most all root vegetables, carrots being my favorite, easy to eat those in the morning. Cucumber, celery, garlic, things like broccoli, cauliflower. And then another really good one is avocados. So these are all things that, you know, upon digestion, aid in alkalizing the system. So very easy for you to get a dose of those things in every day.
What about making sure that you're getting enough minerals in your diet? Calcium, magnesium, potassium, you know, all of these things, not necessarily just from food sources, but even maybe moderate, not insane, but moderate supplementation.
Yeah, I think all of that is good. And obviously most of those minerals are slightly acidic, or some of them are. So similar to when you have indigestion, you take a Tums, which is a calcium carbonate. You know, you're alkalizing the acid. So there are some minerals that not only are very beneficial for the body, but also could help with alkalizing.
Okay. Now, the getting back to the food, Crealkaline is a pH-buffered creatine monohydrate. Is it the creatine or the process that you use to pH-buffer it that can contribute to alkalizing the body?
You know, it's really the fact that that particular product, crealkaline, gets into the system so quickly and that it is alkalized. This particular system, you know, theoretically could be applied to anything. I could treat water. So it's the fact that the crealkaline is buffered. It isn't necessarily the creatine that is contributing, but it's part of the buffer system, being that it is at a higher pH that does contribute. And it's quite interesting. I was going to say is most people, on the days that you're feeling tired, you don't want to get up, if you have allergies and they seem to be worse, guarantee your body is in a lower pH state that morning. It's pretty interesting if you were to track it.
Okay, so tracking it. That was my next question. If I want to track it, so should I buy I mean, we all learned about litmus paper when we were kids in biology class, right? Can I put a drop of blood on it, or do I have to urinate on it, saliva? Where would I go to get the most accurate assessment of my pH state at that moment?
There's two ways that are really the most easiest. Now, this obviously isn't going to tell you the pH of your blood. I wouldn't recommend, you know, somebody, you know, drawing blood. But with the pH strips, urine is one way. The other way is saliva. Now, you'll notice that it will be slightly acidic on those two ends, but you'll be able to track, you know, and you'll see that days that you aren't feeling as good or you're tired, your pH from those two methods are going to be lower. And the days that you are feeling better or that you have used some of these alkalizing foods, you'll notice that your pH will be higher.
What about using blood? So let's say I have a Lancet, because I check my blood sugar levels regularly just because I like to keep track of them. So let's say I have a Lancet. I prick my finger. I take a drop of blood. I put it on a piece of litmus paper, and I turn it over so that the blood isn't blocking the changing color of the paper. And look at the back. Would I truly be assessing the pH of my blood at that moment?
You would. I think it would be kind of hard with the pH strips because they aren't dialed in as if you were to do it with a pH meter. Because we're talking about 7. You know, if your blood was 7.2, you know, you wouldn't be able to determine those points. But absolutely, that would be the pH of your blood at that moment, as long as you didn't contaminate it or, you know, anything you put it on didn't change the test.
And pH meters, are they expensive? Do they have at-home pH meters?
You know, they don't. That's why most people, and I would recommend just the pH strips and use saliva because, again, it isn't so important. Your body will make sure that you are alkalized. If you get too acidic, again, it could cause death, stroke, you know, all types of things. The same way if you're too alkalized. So your body will really work hard with its alkalizing system to keep those stores filled. Remember, you know, just breathing, exercising, you are excreting lactic acid and different types of lactic acids that our body is designed to neutralize. So it does a pretty good job at that.
Let's do this. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to ask you about if you're using dietary means to help alkalize, if the effects are acute, can you see them right away, and how long do they last? We're talking with Dr. Jeff Galini. This is Science for Humans. We're talking about alkalizing the body. You know, acidic states have been associated with cancer development. We can talk about some of these other issues later in the discussion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Freakish muscle gains, Freak Maker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline and medium chain triglycerides, a 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cre-alkaline pH buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
The 1-2 punch for muscle growth is increased pump and increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workout the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's naturopathic programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. Superhuman Radio is made possible through a special grant from All American EFX and their parent company, All American Pharmaceuticals. Please go to Superhuman Radio and click one of the banner ads to learn more. We're talking right now with Dr. Jeff Galini. This is a regularly programmed episode called Science for Humans. And we're talking about alkalizing the body, why it's important, and how to achieve it. So, Dr. Lauren Cordain was the first person who told me that lemons actually have an alkalizing effect on the body, even though that they're acidic in nature. But I never really understood why that was important and how it worked. So if I drink lemon water, is the change in my body's pH rapid? Is it gradual? Does it last all day? Do I have to keep doing things all day long? How does that work?
You know, it is pretty quick. It isn't going to happen in 5 minutes. You know, I would say it takes about a good day to start to make some changes. Again, a lot of it's going to depend on, you know, how much acid that your body is producing that particular day. But you will feel better by the next day.
Is it easier for the body? Maybe easier isn't the right word. So we know the damaging potential of being too acidic. The body starts to leach minerals from the bones. There is breakdown and wear and tear on tissue. There are even some people out there that say that you won't build muscle in a non-alkalized state. But is it safer to push towards a more alkaline side? Does the body have an easier way coping if you're pushing too far to the alkaline side?
No. I mean, again, it's much more difficult to become extremely alkalized, because if you were to drink a whole lot of alkalinity, most of that would go through your system. So there aren't a lot of outside things that I know of that would actually cause your body to go alkaline. Unfortunately, most of them force it to acidicness. And one of the things I was thinking about is if you think about the body as a greenhouse, you know, it has to be in the perfect environment for good health, you know, for things to grow, for your organs and things to work correctly. And that perfect temperature, so to say, is a pH of around, you know, 7.4, which is slightly alkaline. Mm-hmm. You know, once we drop, similar to a greenhouse, things aren't going to grow, or the wrong things are going to grow. As you said earlier, and we talked about last week, you know, cancer cells, you know, one of the common denominators are they like an acidic environment. You know, they don't like alkalinity. And that could have been one of the reasons why our research that's being published here on cancer cells, you know, we did a good job destroying most of those with an alkaline fatty acid. Now, it obviously was a combination of things, but it didn't work with an acidic fatty acid.
Which raises another question. I remember reading once, and it could have been, you know, urban legend or bro science, that making sure that you have adequate amount of fat in your diet can also have an alkalizing effect. Does fat in and of itself have an alkalizing effect?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure if that's really the case. I guess it might depend on, you know, what the fat source was.
Can you get a little deeper into what you mean by that, the fat source? So, in other words, different fats. I want to say there's one that's in beef that I can't think of that's actually wait a minute, because they're fatty acids.
That's what I meant. You know, maybe, you know, if you had an essential fatty acid, an EFA from fish oil, you know, might act differently than bacon fat, you know.
Okay. What about just having adequate amounts of carbohydrates in the diet, whether it be some of the leafy vegetables that you mentioned, or even just yams and rice?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you know, our goal to anything is a balance, is overall health and fitness. So all of those things are going to contribute to helping you feel better. They won't necessarily contribute toward, you know, your acidic level, other than, you know, sometimes if people get too hungry or don't eat the right amounts or even eat carbohydrates, that could cause stress. I think we're talking about having a balanced diet and keeping things in there that are important for the body to work properly.
Does the alkalinity or the pH of blood have, does carbon dioxide have a role in affecting the pH of blood? For some reason, I remember reading a study many years ago about anxiety and carbon dioxide levels in the blood, and also it indicated something about pH in that study.
Absolutely. That's why your body needs to get rid of that. That was one of the things I was talking about, is just simple things like breathing. You know, those wastes are deposited into the blood, and your body needs to neutralize that, and it needs to filter that out.
So deep breathing could have an alkalizing effect.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
What about intermittent fasting? We know that fasting allows the body to rid itself of metabolic debris through autophagy and other metabolic processes. Is there any effect on pH from fasting?
I haven't saw any, or I'm not aware of any, you know, research that would show that fasting would affect pH. Obviously, that's a good thing to do, any types of detox and cleansing, because one of the things that affect pH that we haven't talked about is literally our diet. Most every type of processed food, you know, contains some type of acid. You know, how many soda drinks or how many acid drinks do we drink a day? Let alone, you know, preservatives, and a lot of the different chemicals that go into processed food, you know, TV dinners, you know, lunch meats and things. Those are all serious contributors toward making the system acidic. So, you know, the more of those we eat, the more your body's going to work, to try to balance that out. But again, our good balance is to eat some of these healthy alkalizing foods. Not to say you can go ahead and, you know, have a bologna sandwich and then drink a lemon juice and it kind of neutralizes it.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. That's like the person who does an hour's worth of cardio and then wants to eat a Snickers bar after that because they feel like they earned it, right?
Correct. I think any type of, you know, health and fitness and things that we're going to be talking about, you know, we're trying to give advice for lifestyle changes. You know, we're all going to go out and, you know, have some food that's not very healthy, and the best is go do some cardio, you know. But like I said, I wouldn't drink some lemon juice to try to compensate for that. You might need a Tums or something, you know.
You know, sodium bicarbonate or baking soda is all the rage nowadays amongst endurance athletes. It's supposed to help buffer lactate. What about sodium bicarbonate? Maybe, a teaspoon or two a day. Does that have – you think that would have an alkalizing effect on the body?
It would. You just need to be careful because, you know, that pH on that is about 9. You don't want to take too much. That would be an incident where, you know, there would be a possibility to now over-alkalize the system. Plus, it doesn't taste very good.
Yeah, I know. And if you take too much, it'll do something else to you. You'll spend a lot of time in the bathroom really fast.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great laxative like most of the mineral salts.
I'll never forget. This is probably about 9 years ago, 10 years ago, and I read this whole article about, you know, taking baking soda before a workout along with your creatine. And so I don't remember how many. I think I took a tablespoon or two of baking soda, put it in water, drank it down, and got to the gym and was loading the bar. I had and it was leg day. I was going to squat. I did a warm-up set, and all of a sudden I thought, wow, I got to go to the bathroom. And I went to the bathroom, and I spent the entire workout in the bathroom. I never got out of the bathroom. I got out of the bathroom. I unracked the bar, and I went home. I was like, that was a waste of time because of the baking soda.
Exactly. And that's the problem with us athletes is, you know, we are willing to cross the danger zone because we heard something from somewhere that something worked. You know, baking soda has a great purpose, and I don't believe one of it is to take before a workout. You know, cook with it. There are better ways to alkalize your system than baking soda. Does it work? It probably does, but I would highly not recommend it.
So let's talk about something for a second. This is really interesting. It just dawned on me, right? And maybe the light bulb went off in my head, and I got something that you already said and kind of connected the dots, right? But, okay, insulin resistance, hyperlactidemia. I can't think of the name of it now. You know, when they get lactic acidosis. I'm sorry. Okay.
Right.
So when you're insulin resistant, you develop lactic acidosis. Number one, those people, they can't train very hard for very long. Baking soda is touted because it buffers the pH of the body. So doesn't it make sense that focusing on a diet / lifestyle that contributes to a more alkaline state of the body would actually increase your performance and your endurance in the gym or even on the track?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the quicker that you can dissipate that lactic acid buildup, the longer you're going to go, the more you're going to be able to do. So all of this will help with that.
So wouldn't it be possible that one of the ways to tell if you're already in too acidic of a state is when you have such severe burning when you're training? You're building up so much lactic acid that the body can't get rid of it because there's already so much acid in the environment to begin with.
Correct, and that's just your body's defense mechanism is let's shut down. You know, you hear about these runners who are so mentally strong that they're able to get past that, you know, hitting the wall, and then you go forever because now your alkali systems have kicked in, and it's quite an interesting feel. Usually runners and riders get that. People in the gym, you know, when you get that burn, it's time to stop.
Right.
It's kind of funny. A friend of mine, Tom Platz, years ago used to say that anything you do before you get to that burn is just warm up. But once you hit the burn, that's when you really start building muscle.
Well, and he's the guy who squatted 315 for 51 reps, remember, also.
Exactly, so, with the legs about, you know, yeah, size of dinosaur legs.
But you know what's really funny about that? I feel the same way. When I feel the burn, I feel like that's now I've got equity in the movement. Now everything I do from this point forward is what counts. So it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. Okay, so in summary, pay attention to the body's pH. Find ways to test it so you can find ways to assess whether you're going in the right or the wrong direction with your diet, your training, and your lifestyle, correct?
Correct.
And want to rattle off a couple of the foods real quick again that'll help people become more alkaline?
Yep. The easiest is a little bit of lemon juice in your water every morning. My favorite is carrots. They're easy to eat. Most all leafy greens, spinach, turnips, kale, cucumber, celery, avocados, garlic. So any of those type of things will help to alkalize your system. So I just recommend, a daily portion of those.
Fantastic. Another episode of Science for Humans with Dr. Jeff Galini. Thank you so much today, Dr. Jeff.
Thank you much. You have a good day, Carl.
All right. Talk to you soon. All right. So stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about body image. Continuation of the discussion we had during the first hour. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Do you want free? freakish muscle gains, Freakmaker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines Protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with Carbolin, free alkaline, and medium-chain triglycerides. A 2-to-1 carb-to-protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freakmaker Build delivers 58 grams of fast-absorbing Carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cre-alkaline pH-buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freakmaker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad. New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex is finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex. The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoForce is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of KetoForce and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the KetoForce banner ad today.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high protein, low carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert, but this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. So, what does body image have to do with this whole discussion? My next guest is Dr. Dani Arrigo, and we're going to be talking about that. She is assistant professor of physiology over at the University of Scranton. How you doing, Dr. Arrigo?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. This is actually a continuation of a discussion we had during the first hour of the show, so it's very, very timely that we talk about this. Talk about your recent paper. Describe how the paper was designed. What were you looking to discover?
So this paper was one in a series coming off of a large data collection where we really wanted to just understand a little bit more about young women's experiences over the course of one semester of college. So I can tell you a little bit about this study in particular, and then I'll tell you some more about the overall project. But
sure.
One of my main interests is in social comparison. So that thing that we all do where we look at other people and we see that they're either doing better or worse than us, or maybe they're doing the same, and we have some sort of reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time when we look at someone who's doing better than we are in something that's really important to us, for a lot of young women, unfortunately, that's our appearance. When we look at someone who we perceive as doing better, we immediately feel bad about that. And so my main interest is in how does that affect different individuals, particularly young women who might be vulnerable to negative body image and disordered eating behavior. So one of my students and I actually came up with the idea to look at coping style as a potential, what we would call a moderator, so another influence on what we know is the relationship between social comparisons toward people we think are doing better than us, so mm-hmm. upward appearance comparisons, people who look better than us, and body image and disordered eating behaviors.
And so
that was sort of the impetus for the study.
What did you learn about the individuals who had greater coping styles seem to not be affected by this type of comparison, or did they have a different way of framing it?
Yeah, so actually two really interesting features of the findings. Number one is that women who did upward social comparison but also endorsed more of a positive reframing coping style, so the kind of style where you would be faced with something negative and then you'd immediately look to that and say, well, what are the positives of that? How can I look at this in a different light so that it's not so bad? Those women experienced less body dissatisfaction than women who were less likely to engage in a positive coping style. On the flip side, the women who were engaging in upward social comparison and also endorsed what we would call a self-blaming coping style, so being really self-critical in response mm-hmm. to negative events or trying to distract themselves from the problem, those women experienced more disordered eating symptoms, even controlling for the effect of body image, which we know is related to disordered eating. So it really seems like from this set of analyses, there's more work to do. But from this study, it seems like positive reframing could be of benefit to women who are engaging in this negative upward comparison, whereas self-distraction or self-blame seem to not be doing them any service. It actually seems to be hurting them.
And, you know, this whole the thing that jumps out at me about all of this discussion is the subjectivity of what we perceive individually on our own, what we perceive to be a negative that we need to, you know what I mean? Like some people may look at and a lot of this is actually imposed upon us through
mm-hmm.
what now is the new social norms of everything, right? So, you know,
absolutely.
Right now, women with big round booties, that's in, right? When I was a kid in the 70s, that wasn't in. So today it is. So it's like,
mm-hmm.
and women are really more susceptible to this, unfortunately, than men, but it's unfortunate because it just has a lot to do with timing of when you were born, whether or not your body image happens to be what is in vogue at the moment. And I mean, you know, this is so subjective, the whole thing.
Absolutely. And even if we were to look at objectively a woman who weighs less than, say, I do, if I were the participant, if you were to tell me that this person weighs less than I do versus not tell me anything about that person versus someone who actually weighs more than I do, my perception of who looks better than I do or who's thinner is going to be much more important than the objective reality. And sometimes people will actually ignore the objective reality in favor of their perception. So your perception absolutely is what's important. And it is interesting how over time the so-called ideal body image, what we think of as the ideal, has changed so much. And you're absolutely right that women are much more invested in the ideal than men are. In fact, right now, you know, recently, the thin ideal has been in, but women are much more interested in being the thin ideal than men are interested in them being the thin ideal.
That's the truth. And but the interesting thing about that is this. Men, we don't ebb and flow. I've always liked women with nice round I'm Italian, so you know, we Italians and Latins, we like women who are curvy. I've never liked you know, skinny women. So men are consistent. It isn't like when I was young, I liked this and now I like that. But what changes is what women think is good and bad. That's what changes.
And I think you mentioned earlier, and I think this really is the problem, that what we're being told is the ideal, how it's being sold to us, what's being marketed, what's being forced on us every day, really does tell the story of what women are going to try to conform to. And it is unfortunate that there's such a gender difference in women being so susceptible to this, although there is a lot of emerging evidence that there is an ideal for men, or potentially two ideals for men, and that men are actually becoming more susceptible over time to the influence of what's being marketed to them. So for some men, it's the muscly bodybuilding ideal, and for other men, it's more of the thin intellectual ideal. But if you fall in the middle somewhere, you're not conforming to either, and that's becoming more of a problem for men, which is really unfortunate. This is no longer a women's issue. This is really an issue for society that we need to deal with, and we've been saying that for decades and decades, but unfortunately we haven't gotten any better at it yet.
But let's call a spade a spade. It's not society, it's the media. I mean, look, who drives these trends? It's not like the 100th monkey theory where all women all of a sudden got, you know, connected through the cosmos and they all started thinking the same thing. This is pounded into them in magazines and newspapers and television shows. And, you know, this is the media, and they are the ones that really need to be. The finger needs to be pointed at them, and it has been, don't get me wrong, but they don't care. Until somebody does something to hurt them for this, which is boycott shows or, you know, whatever the case may be, until we take those types of steps where we mobilize our opinions, they don't care. They're going to keep on doing it. Right now, this is in. 10 years, 15 years from now, it's going to be something else. And they just keep oscillating and oscillating, oscillating. They keep, and poor women are confused. What should I strive for? What, even men too,
absolutely,
like you say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other side of the equation, is that really, more so than a thin ideal epidemic among the general population, we have an obesity epidemic. And so women are stuck between trying to prevent becoming obese, which is physically unhealthy. Forget about how attractive it is,
right,
or isn't, but it's physically unhealthy. They're being sold all of these products to help them prevent or mitigate that situation that is actually not helping them be any healthier. And so we're stuck between these sort of twin towers of real difficulty that create a problem for women, and I'm arguing that more and more so for men. And I think in addition to the media, because you're absolutely right, and the finger has been pointed at the media, I think the growing aspect that we need to attend to is social media. So we're being sold more and more through social media, through advertising, but even the way that we look at other people's photos on Instagram or on Facebook, we do this sort of comparison really naturally, and there needs to be something done education-wise or public campaign-wise to help people do something like the positive reframing, or to try to buffer against that negative effect. I don't know that we're ever going to be able to prevent people from feeling bad when they see someone's doing better than they are, but we certainly can do better at what comes after that.
Yeah, no, you're right on the money with this. Here's what I want to do. I want to take a break. Am I correct? The other paper that you have been involved with is The Influence of Exercise Environment and Gender on Mood and Exertion. Was that you as well?
That was not me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Somebody handed me that paper just now. I'm sorry. Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we've got lots more to discuss. We're talking with Dr. Danny Arrigo. We're talking about social comparison and negative body image. And it, you know what? With Facebook and Twitter, it's rampant. You don't even have to turn the TV on anymore. You're already looking at people who are posting selfies of themselves, and it's influencing the way you feel about yourself. And I want to talk more about what happens after you feel bad about yourself. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm.
Phytoform has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now, you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic raw EVOO for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Danny Arrigo. We're talking about social comparison, negative body image, and now we're going to talk a little bit more about disordered eating behavior as a result of that. The paper that I was handed because they were talking about how in magazines today, you know, the physical idea. Like, I just saw Jada Pinkett Smith on the cover of Shape magazine. First of all, it doesn't even look like her anymore. I mean, I remember her from the days of, I'm 56 years old. I remember her from In Living Color. I mean, I remember her when mm-hmm. she was cute, but now she looks just so different in her face and her body is amazing. And, you know, a lot of women we look at these magazines, and it's worse now because Facebook is there constantly. There are people out there who are having professional photo shoots done. You know, they're having special things done to their bodies with the technology. They look so great, and women look at that and they go, "Oh my God, she looks so amazing." What happens when a woman sees one of these unrealistic photos of somebody who's actually been paid to work for months and months for just for this one moment in time, and they look so great? What happens to them inside when they don't have good coping skills? Why does it drive them to eat more, for instance?
Well, I think the original theory that came out about social comparison proposed that wanting to know how you're doing in a particular domain, especially if it's already important to you, is really natural. I mean, no one has to teach us to do that. It's a source of information, and so we just do that automatically. And for a lot of women, and increasingly men, when we look at someone who looks better than us, I mean, there's no changing that appearance is important. Evolutionarily, it gives you information, and socially, it gives you information about status, you know, socioeconomic or otherwise. It gives you information about how much you can trust in someone's immune system from an evolutionary standpoint. So appearance is important. We can't really dispute that at this point, but it's not as important as a lot of people make it out to be.
Right.
So when we look at someone who looks better than us, we immediately feel bad. And that's speaking from just talking to women on the street, talking to participants in my studies. And there's a huge base of scientific evidence that suggests that even in the situation that you're describing, women know that these pictures are airbrushed. Women know that this woman has been working out 24/7 to get ready for this cover shoot. They know that it's not realistic, but we all still have that immediate negative response. What comes next are some thoughts, typically. So for people who have, as you said, positive coping skills, we're able to discount how important that is and say, okay, well, you know, she looks better than I do, but that's not really what's important to me right now, or my whole life is not about that, even better. Or we engage in, she looks better than I do, and that means something bad for me. And often these thoughts are not consciously processed. It's not that we're sitting there having a long conversation with ourselves that we're aware of and can recount later.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Automatically.
I was going to ask you if it's conscious, if there's the self-talk, or is it not even self-talk? It's this feeling that occurs, and it's not even mentally verbalized. You know what I'm saying?
Often it's not, that's a good way to put it, often it's not mentally verbalized. It's something that happens automatically. Unfortunately, immediately after that, and especially accumulated over time, what we're seeing is that not only immediately after you look at someone who's doing better than you, but the more you're exposed to that and the more you choose to engage in that, because that's the other piece, is that we can actually seek out those opportunities. The more you engage in that, whether it's forced or selected, the more at risk you are later for developing disordered eating behaviors. We have this evidence in women, and I suspect that it could be the same in men, although we don't have as much evidence. A paper that I published last year looked exactly at that. How much does, over and above what we already know about risk for developing disordered eating, what can upward social comparison, that kind where you're doing it toward people who you think look better than you do, how much can that add to the picture of being able to predict, even over the course of one semester, who is going to significantly increase their disordered eating behaviors? So we only have self-report of disordered eating behaviors at this point. There's a lot of work left to go looking at actual clinical significance at some of these behaviors. But the measure that we were using in our study actually had what's called a clinical cutoff. So there's a threshold that you have to meet in order for the disordered eating behaviors to be what we would think of as representing a clinical syndrome.
What was that cutoff? Like what?
On the self-report measure, it's a score of a 2.3 on the global scale.
Okay.
That usually equates to at least a couple of days a week you're engaging in problematic behaviors, and that ranges everywhere from restriction to negative thoughts about yourself that might lead to other problematic behaviors, binge eating, purging, etc.
Ah, okay. And I would imagine that there are some people who almost take this to a neuroses type level where they, like, you know, there's sometimes there's a certain pain that you get used to and it becomes something that's necessary. You know, we know people that they cut. I mean, I have this thing where if I take a toothpick and put it right between two certain teeth, it hurts, but I like it and I keep doing it, right? So there's got to be people who they know it doesn't make them feel good, but they keep searching for more and more people to look at and compare themselves to.
And I think, you know, that goes back to the point about the original theory suggesting that this is a natural way that we get information about ourselves. Because evolutionary, think about how advantageous that is. If you don't know how you're doing on some domain that's important, if you don't know whether you have enough food to sustain you, if you don't know whether you're the strongest alpha male, you need to know that in order to either hook up with the people who are going to protect you if you're not that strong, or to protect your own resources if you think there's a threat from people who might not individually be as strong as you are. So we're sort of built with this hard wiring to compare ourselves to other people. And I think going back to what you were saying before, that what happens after that can be uniquely problematic. Because one of the other things that we know is that not everyone who engages in social comparison, you know, in other words, everyone on the planet, not everyone is at risk for problems as a result. But we see this in depression, not just in disordered eating, but also with depression. Individuals who exhibit depressive symptoms often engage in upward comparison processes, not necessarily about appearance, but about all kinds of things, not being as articulate or as smart as someone else. And they'll seek out examples of this. We see this with chronic illness patients. Some of the other work that I've done has looked at people who have more of a neurotic, as you said, outlook or personality style will actually look for confirmation of their negative bias about themselves. We seek that's another hardwiring. We seek out negative information so that we can quickly perceive threat and quickly mitigate it. But the problem is that we're not addressing the threat. We're just kind of letting it sit there and letting it negatively affect us.
I wonder if these individuals who have these deranged coping mechanisms, or they actually like to even seek this out to validate how they feel about themselves. I wonder if there are other traits, psychological traits, like for instance, there are people in the world that I for my own lack of better terminology, I call them finite thinkers. Like, in other words, if you're successful, then you somehow took something away from this finite amount of success that I can no longer have. So I resent you and I'm jealous of you. And I wonder if that is a parallel thinking process for people, because I've never looked at pictures. I mean, I look at pictures and think, gee, if I trained a little harder, I could look like that. But I've never beat myself up about not looking a certain way or feeling a certain way, if that's influenced the way I eat or even the way I view myself in my life. But I also don't believe that anything in life is finite. I don't feel like your success somehow takes something away from me. And I also believe that I can achieve the things I need to achieve on my own without the help of other people. I wonder if there are other thought processes that parallel this type of behavior that would also elucidate to people who are more prone to this.
I'm really glad that you're bringing that up. That's one of the intricacies of the theory and the process as it plays out in real life that often we don't really get to talk about. So I'm glad that you're bringing this up. What you just described, looking at someone who looks better than you do and not feeling bad, but saying, hey, you know, if I did X, Y, and Z, I could probably get to that point. What you did in that situation is what we would call identification. So you saw similarities between yourself and the person who's doing better. And that actually made you feel good because it was inspiring. We see that a lot with, again, say chronic illness. People who have been through the worst of an illness, have survived, have a positive outlook, we look at that and say, you know, wow, that person is inspiring or motivating, rather than that person makes me feel bad.
Right.
The other process where we're looking at someone who's doing better and seeing everything that we're not, we would call that contrast. And so different people have propensities toward identification versus contrast. And even within the same person, over time, you can see the same person engage in both identification and contrast, essentially with the same comparison other or the comparison target. So the thing that I'm most interested in about this is what differentiates each situation. So what makes someone more likely to identify with an upward target at certain times versus others, or what makes different people more likely to identify versus contrast? And one of the reasons it's so interesting is that we just don't know yet.
Yeah, this is really intriguing because If we can, if you can unlock these types of things and understand them better, then there could be therapeutic approaches to helping people.
Exactly.
Stop this behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But you got to understand what track they're on before you start hitting the switches to move the train over, you know? So.
Right. So actually one, it's not published yet, but something I've been working on for a long time is a really brief, exactly what you're saying, kind of intervention that tries to guide people toward what we would think of as helpful comparisons, upward identification versus upward contrast. What we're seeing, at least among college students, is that what you're doing naturally, so if you're naturally doing upward identification, it's helpful as far as your motivation to improve your health behaviors. But just telling you to do that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be any better at it, or that that's going to make you feel any better, or that you're going to be more motivated. One study that is actually in data collection mode right now, we're trying to see if getting people to engage a little bit more with the process, so have them actually identify explicitly what some similarities are between themselves and the other person, if that can help facilitate the identification process.
What about real quick? What about social circles and support mechanisms? You know, when I was thinking in my head jokingly, well, you know, we had a way to handle this when I was a kid in Brooklyn. If you looked at somebody says, "Oh, look at him, he's got a Cadillac," and your best friend would say, "Yeah, but he's an a-hole," and you go, "Yeah, that's right," and you forgot about it, right? So, you know, it's like we had this way of leveling it out. It was called "He's an a-hole." But I mean, mm-hmm. What about social structures? If other people see value in you, sometimes you'll see value in yourself. These people who tend to be the worst responders to these types of behaviors, are they also lone wolves quite often?
So, I mean, what you're asking some of the most important questions that I think we're only just now starting to tap into, looking at the dynamics of social structures, not just between me and this other person I'm thinking about, because with social comparison, they don't even have to be right in front of me. I could make up the person. I could remember someone I met yesterday. Mm-hmm. I could think of a TV figure. But how does that process play out when it's you and another live person, or when it's a group of people? And actually, the situation you just mentioned, where you would reverse it and do a downward comparison on a dimension that's not the dimension that you were doing the upward comparison essentially. That is one of the only things that I've ever seen in the scientific literature that helps women in the moment mitigate the negative effects of an upward comparison, is to turn it around and say, well, that model is beautiful and she's doing better than I am in that respect, but she might not be as smart or articulate or motivated as I am for this other thing.
No. What women say is, she may be hot, but she's a dumb B-word, and that makes me feel better. That kind of makes me feel really good right now. But
it's true. There's some evidence to suggest that it does. One other thing that I'll tell you about this really quickly, but one other thing that I've done that seems to reduce women's propensity toward upward comparisons, particularly about appearance, is having them do a process called expressive writing, which is much more involved than journaling, not just kind of, you know, doodling around about your feelings, but actually expressing your deepest thoughts and feelings about body image and experiences that you've had that might have skewed your body image in a negative way. And gearing people toward not only expressing those emotions, but also thinking about how they want to use this information in the future, and if they want to stay in the same mindset or move toward something more important to them, can actually reduce their disordered eating behaviors for certain women and the amount that they engage in upward comparison.
Awesome stuff. And we have a lot of personal trainers that listen to the show, and hopefully they're listening to some of this stuff because they can help their clients a lot better. Listen, Dr. Arrigo, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This has really been a good discussion. Very, very good.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Take care. All right, so there you have it. What a great show this has been today, huh? I want to thank Dr. Paul Mueller from the Mayo Clinic, of course, Dr. Jeff Galini, and Dr. Why can't I remember her first name? Isn't that terrible? My brain isn't working. Dr. Danielle Arrigo. Thank you for listening. We went a little long today. Holy mackerel. It's 2 minutes, 3 minutes after 2. All right, so we're going to see you tomorrow with more Supreme Radio. Thank you for listening.